Hey, Maj, how's it going, man?
What's up? How are you?
Pretty good, pretty good. Number one, thanks for coming on and taking this call. I don't know how much you know about me. There's a podcast called the People Who Don't Suck podcast. And I came across your stuff on Instagram a couple months ago, and I was super fascinated by your movement and what you've got going on. So yeah, I guess just first off, just kind of tell me your background and how, for you, Black Guns Matter came together.
Well, first, it was just, me, my background is, I say this all of the time. I'm just, a reformed scumbag. You know what I'm saying? The person that wasn't really doing the right thing, wasn't being positive, wasn't being as productive as I should be. And, scumbag could just be somebody like, how, like, you're supposed to be working out, but you being a piece of shit, like, just sitting on the couch eating, like, Cheetos. You know what I mean? So it's like, and you should be, like, not doing that, So. Just in seeing certain things and traveling with music, and just seeing that, okay, this is a game, like this is a setup, I have answers. There's too many of my friends are catching the same, charge, and so we started a license to carry drive in Philly, and it was packed. It was so many people, and so many people from other places was like, "Yo, man, I wish there was something like this in my town," and so we were like, "Yo, why wouldn't? How cool would it be if we did like?" Maybe a 13 city tour. And we did that. And then so many people were like, "Yo, man, we ran through those cities." And they were like, "Yo, you didn't come to my town." And so we was like, how cool would it be if we did, a 50 state tour?" And that's where we at now with it.
Well, that's awesome, man. Yeah, so I saw you on Fox News. I don't know how long ago that was. You were talking to a British dude, and he tried to kind of distill the movement into saying that more guns in the hands of, young people in the inner city will kind of offset a lot of the violence that is endemic to the inner city. But you countered with, it's less about the guns than it is about education and having people recognize it as a tool. So I would just, I guess I'm just trying to rephrase how you specifically envision how you would explain Black Guns Matter to somebody who's never heard of it.
To a person that's never heard it, it's something along the lines of, we're an organization that sees that there are social conditions that are wrong. We're an organization that sees that racial tensions are high. Racism exists. Classism exists. And our organization is, trying to get people back onto, core American principles as documented in, the Constitution and the Bill of Rights. And getting people from all of those backgrounds that recognize that those injustices exist to make sure that you can defend the things that you want. You can defend the beliefs that you have. You know what I mean?
Right. Yeah, so I mean, to this end, all right, so I'm from Harlem. I grew up in Harlem, went to kind of like a bougie private school in the Upper West Side in Manhattan, and I've kind of been on that track my entire life. I went to this private school, high school, I went to like, a private college, blah, blah, blah. Most people I know, if they had heard the phrase Black Guns Matter, would think I was making some sort of joke or making light of the issues in the black community. So I guess my question to you is, what has your response been to sort of the social justice warrior, liberal, white class of people who almost might not, they would almost disapprove of what you're doing?
They would only disapprove if they didn't know the actual what we're actually doing. I mean, and if they disapprove and then don't do research to see exactly what we are doing, then I can't even really, they're not really, they don't have a leg to stand on. But if they do say, okay, Black Guns Matter, and they do, it's a very simple Google search. I mean, a bajillion pages come up of the actual work that we're doing. You know, if that's something that they see that, hey, this work is actually very, very legitimate, when that happens, then the philosophy changes. You know, it's like we all profile. We all profile. We see the scary guy or girl walking up the street at 3 o'clock in the morning, we profile. Until there's information that can prove that our initial negative profile or stereotype is inaccurate, we hold on to that. Now, when we have the information to the contrary, And if we still continue to try to box somebody in with the improper profile, then that's where we're wrong. We're biased, you know?
Right.
And, you know, when you are being biased, that's just making an emotional commitment to staying wrong. That's what bias is. You know what I'm saying? So yeah. It's like, if that person would listen and understand what we actually do, you know, then they'll go, oh, okay. So this is about safety, education, training, knowledge, and those things. So we get it from both sides. We get people that say, oh, why is it for black people only? Well, we're not for black people only. And if that's what you, the only thing that you heard, that's great that you would be open enough to have the dialogue to say, you know, even if you worded it a little weird, to say, hey, is this for just black people? You know, or if you're like, well, I don't think that more guns are the answer. Okay, well, we aren't saying that. So it's a good thing we're on the same page there. And if that prompts you to say, hey, I don't think guns are the answer, and it creates dialogue, then I'm there for that too.
Right.
I'm not advocating for more firearms. I'm not advocating for racial disruption. I'm advocating for honesty and justice and information and education. And wherever the chips fall after that, I'm fine with it, because it's from a place of, these are human rights. There are social injustices that are happening, and you have to acknowledge them in order to fix them. And anyone that would say, no, there needs to be less information and less safety, or no, social injustices don't exist, you're lying. You're lying. Right.
Exactly. Well, all right. So to that end, because again, you know, I grew up in New York City, and, you know, I feel like I've always kind of been between worlds. Like, I grew up in Harlem, you know, my dad was in jail, but then I went to this, like, you know, fancy private school with all these rich white kids. And I, over the years, as I've grown up, I've noticed, and I'm curious as to your opinion on this, sort of this black victimization that I think a lot of white liberals like to cast upon black people, regardless of what their actual life is like. Do you know what I mean? I feel like there's a rejection of sort of black people taking matters into their own hands and being in charge of these issues that you're talking about. So, do you experience that, or do you have any thoughts on sort of
I don't experience it, and most of the people that's down with us don't, because we don't suffer or accept victim mindsets at all. Mm. We call things that, you know, okay, if a politician creates a policy that disproportionately affects urban America, we're going to call that policy. We're going to say, this is bullshit, this is the reason why, and that's that. Mm. Now, that is an external thing. When it's something that's internal, something that maybe somebody externally tried to hoist onto you, but then when it becomes self-perpetuating, we don't accept that. We don't accept that. We go, nah, that, I see why you set that up there, but it's a setup, and I don't have to participate in it. So if somebody via television says, oh, what you're supposed to do with your money in the urban community, black, white, Asian, it doesn't matter, is you're supposed to go to the strip club and throw your money away, like if that's the constant thing, we got to acknowledge that as the constant theme, but we also got to go, yeah, but I don't have to go literally throw my money away.
Right.
It's like the booby trap. You set the booby trap, I have to step in it. So you got to acknowledge, hey, there's booby traps that people are setting, but nah, them Jones don't really have power over me once I recognize them, because I could just go around the booby trap.
Right. So, and I find that there's this continuous sort of, like, you know, again, from these people, for lack of a better word, liberal white people that are like, oh, you don't know any better. You can't get outside that booby trap without our help. And to me, that's a sense of arrogance and entitlement and another form of maybe not racism, but discrimination, to assume that, you know, people in urban communities of, you know, of whatever racial background can't emancipate themselves without the help of, frankly, rich white liberals. And that's just something I've experienced kind of being between
It's like saying you guys don't. You should pull yourself up by the bootstraps, but here's the boots. We're going to help you. Here's the straps. Here's how you tie them. Da, 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 da. The reality is a lot of those policies, and some of those guys just, you know, they say that in them scenarios, but the reality is their policies are very restrictive and of human rights. You know, those policies, like, okay, if you're saying, you know, you take the Clinton administration, you know, on one hand, they're promoting as if they're culturally sensitive and understanding, but it comes off very, you know, what's the term? It's very, it's a ignorance, and there's a certain level of vanity in the ignorance.
Yeah, it's condescending. I mean, meanwhile, you know, you look
that's
at the
perfect word.
Right, exactly. And I feel a lot of people are intimidated when there is sort of this, you know, black confidence that kind of disrupts that whole, like, you need our help mentality. And meanwhile, you know, you look at the Clinton administration, more black incarcerations, you know, happen under... Right, exactly. But then we're supposed to just be like, no, Hillary Clinton's our friend. And it's like, well...
Because it's a battle between popular culture and how they perceive how it's spun, the PR job, and how it's the policy.
Right.
Policy's underhanded. The PR job is fucking, I got hot sauce in my bag on the Breakfast Club,
right.
You know?
Right.
Or Bill Clinton playing, you know, the fucking saxophone.
Right, exactly. Yeah, with some sunglasses on, all of a sudden I'm supposed to think he's down with black people. It's like, meanwhile, you know, Hillary Clinton is referring to black criminals as super predators and golfing at all-white golf clubs in the 70s. It's like, let's be real about it. And that's, I want to kind of segue into, you know, sort of Trump and politics. I'm pretty down the middle in terms of politics. I don't like being sensationalized. I don't like indulging in sensationalized headlines. I feel like people don't really talk about policy and issues. People talk about, like you're talking about, headlines. They talk about sound bites. They talk about spin rather than what's happening. So I guess I'm just curious as to how you kind of viewed or currently view, because it's always evolving, Trump's presidency right now.
I think that President Trump is the most, maybe go down in history as the most pro two-way fire up president we've ever had.
Mm.
That's what I will say.
Yeah.
He's the first standing president to address the NRA at the annual meetings.
Mm-hmm.
I think that there's a certain level of disconnect that happens when you're a billionaire for however many years.
Sure.
But I don't need my president to be right in the neighborhood with me. I don't. Mm-hmm. I also understand the importance of local politics. So what I need, you know, what I would be satisfied with from Trump, a lot of the things that people say about Trump, right? They say, oh, well, he's a bigot, he's a racist, he's this, that, and the third. His son, I know his son, Donald Trump Jr., got pictures with him, spoke a few times. Good dude.
Yeah.
Mike. I think that what happens is, depending on which media outlet is telling the story, especially about a billionaire who's kind of removed from the rank and file people, because I've been a billionaire for a few decades.
Sure.
I think that what happens is people mix policy with, again, with the PR. So
right.
You say things like, oh, because, you know, he's harsher in a time where for however long we've been playing, you know, very, you know, marshmallow, to be honest. Everybody's been hoaxing feelings and participation trophies and things of that nature.
Right.
So when you have somebody that says, in Chicago or Detroit says, I mean, okay, you have no jobs, which is true.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? You're getting shot.
Well, here's the thing. You know, people try to, like, you know, Trump says these things, or anywhere, whenever someone says these things about these communities, everyone's up in arms like, oh, how that's insensitive, or that's, how could they say that? It's like, motherfucker, it's the truth. You know, it's just like, I grew up in 147th and Lenox, and all I see now from when I was a kid is more rich white people displacing the people that I grew up with. I don't see anyone doing better than, you know, there might be some fancy cupcake shops and coffee shops there, but that's not progress. So when a politician comes out and says, hey, the hood's fucking up on some levels, I'm like, yeah, tell me more. But, you know, so again.
Right, because okay, if I'm from North Philly and you've owned this home outright, grandfather, grandmom did a great job. They owned the house outright. Mm. You made no improvements. Because you submitted to popular culture telling you that you were supposed to throw $30,000 away at the strip club.
Mm-hmm.
You made no improvements. You may have not paid your taxes on that property. The tax, you're getting flanked on both sides by higher property taxes.
Mm-hmm.
Now you can't pay your property taxes, and then somebody says, A, we're going to seize your house, or B, hey, we'll sell this house, we'll buy this house off for you because of the fact that you can't afford it. And you didn't develop any of the businesses in the community, and we're talking about 20, 30 years go past. Now Temple University shows up and they like, we buying this whole fucking block. Buy the block.
Yep.
You know? So at a certain point, there's individual accountability. Again, the booby trap was set. And I'm not going to pretend like economic debilitation, destabilization by giving huge grants and subsidies and tax shelters to foreign companies or foreign families to come in and to run stores in the ghetto. You know what I'm saying? As opposed to leaving us alone and we finding our own equilibrium. in doing so, that is a tactic. That is a strategy.
Sure.
So because of that, the booby trap is there. Now, if you choose to continue and push forward with the booby trap, that's when it becomes individual accountability. And then people go, well, you can't be so mad. So it's a balance there, you know. So, right. But you can't say one without the other. You can't say, oh, there's so many incarcerated black males, but you made damn near everything illegal. And in certain areas, in certain zones, those things, harsher crimes that have higher, you know, scheduling on the narcotics list,
right,
get less time. That is a tactic. That is a strategy.
For sure.
You know? But then you got to go, well, dude, if you knew that, why were you selling crack?
Right, exactly. But then, and that's when society steps in. Ugly.
It's mm-hmm. a beautiful ugly. The precision of it and how it can seemingly only make the person responsible is the one individual. It's beautiful in that regard, but the reality is the intent and the setup is extremely ugly. It's precise, but right. it's ugly for American
well,
citizens.
And that's a similar thing. And, you know, just to go back to Trump for a second, it's like, you know, I don't necessarily, you know, endorse Trump or like, yeah, he's my guy. But there's a ton of shit that he says and said during the campaign trail that, you know, my ears perked up. I was like, yeah, I'm listening, like, because I haven't heard anyone address these things. So I've been too afraid of the backlash. And if nothing else about Trump, it is refreshing to have some type of politician who doesn't give a fuck about backlash. And right. I think opening that up allows for more honest conversations, because that, in my estimation, is what has held back the black community and their inner city, is this fear of really having, you know, real talk about the things that face the, you know, the inner city. And that's why, again, go ahead.
Because America has been made to be soft. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's just real. That's from everyone, again, participation trophies.
Right.
You know, we dealing in the marshmallowization of America. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? It's like, so all of everybody's going to get the trophy just for no one lost? No right. one worked hard for somebody else? How does that make the person that's working harder, you know, feel a certain way? And there's a balance that we have to acknowledge for. We have to deal with the fact that, especially black people in America, our genealogy, our lineage was attacked. That happened. So now it's our responsibility to acknowledge that, level the playing field, and at the same time stop pretending like there aren't systemic things in position that perpetuate that. That's one. The other thing is, after doing that, now everybody's got to rumble hard and maneuver the way that they do. I can beat a lot of, you know, the booby traps, for lack of a better term. I could beat them with a little bit of money and a little bit of knowledge itself. I can see the strategy. I can see the chess move. But if I succumb to it, and if I just go, well, it's, you know, if I believe what mainstream media or certain liberals would say, that it's an impossible task, that's another trick. That's another part of
right.
it. To be offended when someone says, yo, just do it. I mean, you're just giving the black vote away to Democratic, you know, politicians for nothing. They just give right. it and they don't have to do anything.
Right. The amount of people who take for granted my, you know, the assumption, or, you know, and this is a form of racism, when someone comes up to me and assumes that either A, I hate Donald Trump, like hate, not like disagree with, hate. I don't believe in hating really anyone, especially politicians. There might be a lot of stuff I disagree with. On a political level, but to just assume that I am with Hillary or whatever, that's an assumption that I take a lot of offense to. It's just like, what about this candidate makes you think I'm just going to, like, that Hillary needed to earn it just as much as Donald Trump did. And the fact that people kind of assume that because she was a white lady that she was my team, I don't think so about that. Just and another thing, in terms of sort of black perceptions of sort of, you know, gun culture, you know, people I've seen, well, actually, let me ask you, have you ever heard of this YouTube channel called Niggas on the River?
No.
They're two brothers who fish in Oregon, and they're this sort of embody this outdoor lifestyle. Like, they're just consummate fishermen. Like, they go out, they catch fish, they're about that lifestyle. And a lot of what they do is trying to dispel this notion that this is just white people stuff. You know what I mean? Like, quote unquote, like guns, fishing, the outdoor lifestyle. When in reality, historically, that's as much, you know, our history as it is white people's.
Right.
You know what I mean?
I get it. And that's the thing that you run into with, you know, I'm a member of the NRA. I don't agree with all of the stuff that they say. However, I have to acknowledge certain things historically and even more recently that the NRA has done for specific, because everybody goes, well, give me a case where, okay, I can give you one within the last few years. Shanine Allen, you know what I'm saying? Otis McDonald. I can get, you know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. The Deacons of Defense. You know, mm-hmm. there's things.
Well, that who are those people? Because I don't know.
Shanine Allen was a young lady from Philly. I know Shanine. She had a license to carry. She drove over the bridge to New Jersey and informed the officer, hey, I got a license to carry in Philadelphia, blah, 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 blah. You know what I mean? She went to jail. The cop locked her up because you can't carry in New Jersey. Right. NRA heard about it, helped her out with her legal fees, pushed her, got Governor Christie to give her a pardon.
Wow.
That happened. So when people go, well, where were they on Philando Castile? It's like, all right, well, I don't need them to talk for me. That's number one. Mm-hmm. And number two, you gotta take the good with the bad. I disagree. I think they should have said something about Philando. But they also did actually put money up for Shanine Allen to help her, the single mom, not, like, go to jail for a long time. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So, like, when people don't do the knowledge there, they don't do the knowledge of the information, and they just say, well, woo, they make these blanket statements. And so that same thing is like those brothers, you know, in relation.
But it's also a double standard, though, because it's like, where was Obama for like a lot of shit for 8 years pertaining to the black community, you know? Right. It's like, yeah, sure, the NRA, I'm sure, you know, was absent for a lot of things pertaining to people of color. But at the same time, just because we had a black president who was making jokes on The Tonight Show does not mean he was fixing the hood at the same time. You know what I mean?
And then you could say, and there's passes for him. When my man reinstituted the Patriot Act, I knew what time it was. I was like, oh, okay. Uh-huh. All right. I mean, I at least in 08, it was, all right, well, you know, maybe dude will get, like, the Patriot Act out of here because he just went hard on Bush Jr.
Right.
He'll get that out of here, and maybe he'll legalize marijuana. Maybe. Those are the two. I gauge presidencies by, okay, what are the two, maybe three things that, like, I'll be, okay, that was good. You know what I'm saying? And those were the two for me that was like, I didn't even think, I knew in my mind the NFA isn't getting repealed with this guy in. I knew that.
Right.
But it was like, okay, maybe marijuana legalization and maybe, you know, the Patriot Act. I get one of those two, I'll be like, none of those happened. He first thing he does, double down on that. Did you close Guantanamo Bay? Fuck no. You know what I'm saying?
Right. That's what I'm saying. And our culture gives this guy, who, like, whatever, I'm fine with Obama, but there's a lot of heinous shit that he had a hand in, if not was directly responsible for. But again, on the flip side of sort of this, you know, white liberal culture, you know, they're afraid to criticize him because he's black, because people don't want to be seen as quote-unquote racist. It's just like, no, it's more racist for you to be afraid to call this guy out because he's black. You know what I mean? It's like, it's almost...
Because they're doing it from the concept of culture and not policy. That's what, PR, public relations, pop culture, and policy. So me, I go, nah, cuz I have the ability to say, well, I think that visually for a young person to see that to be something that they can aspire to, that's great. But at the same time, his policies, I completely disagree here, here, and here. And I think it's awesome that he's a father. I think it's awesome that he's married. I think it's awesome that he maneuvered through things. He was the first president at Harvard Law. I think those things are amazing. I think he's an amazing writer. I think The Audacity of Hope is a great book. I read it 2 times.
Yeah.
You know, but I also know what the IMF is. I also know what the Federal Reserve is.
Right. You know, yeah, like you're allowed to, exactly, you're allowed to have like a human perception of these people. And it's like, whether it's Obama or Trump, like, it can't be all good and it can't be all bad. Like, I cannot accept that everything Donald J. Trump is doing as president is terrible. You know, I can't accept that, like, there's no tangible good out of it. It's like, I understand why people disagree with things that he has done, but to go across the board, like, nope, we're just anti-everything. I'm like, well, that doesn't help anything, I don't think.
That actually continues a certain level of ignorance and extremism that the negative powers that be that want a lion's share of the resources and not for the rest of us, that actually benefits them for us to think that way. I participate in the middle path. I'm a Jedi. The extremes is the way of the Sith.
Yeah.
I'm not a fucking Sith.
Fear. I'm a Jedi. Yeah, exactly.
You know what I'm saying? So because of that, I have an understanding of, even when I see things on the news, I'm like, yeah, well, you know, not really, but okay. Sure. I understand the concept of what selling ad revenue means, and selling ad time and airtime and shit like that.
Right. Like when Donald Trump says CNN is fake news, maybe why he's saying it is wrong, but CNN is definitely a bullshit news outlet. Like if you look at their headlines and what their openly, you know, whatever biased agenda is, it's like, we can't pretend that there's some like outstanding journalistic news source, all right? Like you go to their website, it damn near has titty ads at the bottom of it, you know? It's like they exist to sell clicks, you know?
But you know what somebody like me does? I got a favorable gun story on CNN a few weeks ago.
Mm.
So for me, I'll go and say, okay, CNN is, you know, you guys are getting beat to hell because of these reasons over here,
mm-hmm.
you know? I get it, but for me, I think that I would like to be on CNN to, if you guys did have an opportunity to present something objective, would you? And then they do. So we get a favorable gun story on CNN because of that. Because well, I go, hey, because so many times, you know, even in gun culture, people tell me, man, don't do CNN because they're a rag. No, they're going to spin. Don't do the New York Times. I've done the New York Times. Got a great story out of it. I've done CNN. Got a great story out of it. Don't do Tommy Lahren's show. She's a horrible person. I've done Tommy Lahren.
How was that, by the way?
It was excellent. I mean, yeah. I flew there. She had just beat Charlamagne Tha God up a little bit on the Black Lives Matter thing, and that's because he did a Skype interview, you know, and there's a delay sometimes if your connection isn't amazing.
Sure.
And your connection in your house and her connection at the Blaze Studios might be a little bit different, you know. Right. So for me, I flew out there. Sat on the couch. And we had a great exchange, and we understood where we agreed and where we disagreed.
Mm-hmm.
And the irony is, in that interview, we had way more agreeing points than, you know, disagreeing points. But here's the thing. That's because she's firm. See, when people are firm, they get attacked because, again, we're in the marshmallowization of America. So if somebody, some young 24, 25-year-old blonde girl from South Dakota shows up and is saying harsh things, oh, she's racist. No, she's not. So now if Dana, you know, Loich from NRA TV says some things and it's edited a certain way and people go, oh, my God, she means the NRA is saying kill black people. And now because she said, I did Dana's show yesterday. Right. Dana's been a very positive supporter of Black Guns Matter because we're actually doing the work. We're actually informing American citizens across the United States and urban areas that need it the most about the Second Amendment, about their human right to self-defense, and how to do that legally and safely. So why wouldn't Dana get behind that? If Dana had an issue with black people, it's the second or third time I've done Dana's show.
Right.
You know what I mean? So it's like, if the NRA didn't like black people, it would be like, the NRA. The tagline would be, only for white people. You know what I'm saying?
right. But I'm just saying, like... Yeah, and that's why I love what you do, and the fact that you're opening these paths to conversation that most people would either A, be horrified to have or too afraid to have. And like, for example, so I drive across country a lot. Like, I'm from New York City. You know, I've lived in LA for a while. I drive between LA and New York by myself in a beat, you know, 1991 Mercedes that's falling apart, going through places that people tell me, oh, don't go there. Like, you're going to get lynched there. Or, oh, that's Trump country. You shouldn't go there. And I go to these places. And no, not everyone is welcoming with open arms. But I met wonderful, awesome people that supposedly, you know, culture tells me is trying to kill me, you know?
Right.
So it's like, you know, when I'm in Arkansas and I'm at a dive bar and some old white guy with a handlebar mustache and a cowboy hat, and we start bullshitting about how much we hate LA, it's like, according to Facebook, Twitter, and, you know, the internet, that shouldn't have happened, but it did.
Right.
So everyone's afraid to kind of open these channels of conversation without a bias, you know what I mean?
Because they have fear in their heart. And, see, I don't suffer from, I'm very self-realized at this point.
Mm.
You know what I'm saying? And there's certain rooms that I know when I get into, I'll probably waver.
Right.
I have not met any of those rooms yet because they're going to start, those rooms are going to be when I'm around $100 million and the people that are around me are the people that I'm talking to around billions of dollars.
Mm.
I haven't been in that room, but I'm self-actuated enough to know that the things that I'm dealing with in this room or these rooms, are they aren't going to change my viewpoint. So with that being the case, there's a certain level of sturdy that's there with me. Some people can't even have the conversation because they know they're not sturdy. So they respond defensively. But to me, it's like, nah, I can go in that room and have that conversation. If you're a warrior, you can go in the fire and come out cool as a fan. So I can go in the room and go, yeah, well, I said what I said. If doing an interview with Tommy is going to shake me, she's like 5'2". Like, what? Is she going to turn into a monster and gobble me up?
Right.
Oh, so it's like I can say what I want. I can hear her points. And I can, like, receive what I understand and find and go into it and find the common ground. If in our scenario, the common ground is freedom of choice and maybe firearms, you know, and the right for people to exercise their right to defend themselves, then so be it. We'll focus on that. And we'll figure out where we can get some money together and some power and freedom together in that lane. You know, if I'm doing a interview with, you know, Noor, you know, I can – so many people have told me to, you know, not – disagree with him because you more hood and he more, you know, middle class. Why? We have the love and respect for, you know, the right to self-defense and you know, in common. So right. why do I do that? I consciously look for areas that I can build. I get it. It's cute to destroy things. It's cute, you know, but at a certain point in being rebelling, I get it. Rebelling, you know, it's sexy. But at a certain point, you have to start building things. Like, if you're always running around destroying shit.
Right.
You know what I mean? And so it's like, for me, okay, where are the bridges that I can build that helps people that's behind me that I cannot even let them have to even think about this in 20 years? The people that I can't build with, I'm not fucking with them because I can't build with you. I put more time into building the things that I love than bashing the things that I hate.
Right. So to this end, again, so I live in a bubble and I come from a bubble just because of New York City. New York City, for as much as people try to pretend it's some diverse place now. Right. Exactly. It's my hometown, but it's been transformed for a number of reasons. For one, there's no middle class there anymore. When I was growing up, you know, early 90s, you know, there was an actual opportunity somewhat for people of lower means to make it in New York City. Now it's a playground for the rich and everyone's running around. And like, I go on a date with a girl, for example, and I'm like, oh yeah, my grandpa, you know, he hunted all the time. You know, he was a black man from Harlem who went upstate New York, bought himself some property and, you know, built himself a hunting cabin. So I would get to go there and shoot guns. That's my relationship to growing up with guns. But I tell some corny white girl in New York City that she's like, oh my God, you have guns? And it's like, well, what the fuck, lady? You're from Wisconsin. Like, I thought you were supposed to be the one telling me about guns. So what would be your message to people in this bubble who do such a good job of keeping themselves isolated from ideas like yours?
They're doing themselves a tremendous disservice. And some of the people that are playing you, because that's what's happening, they're telling you to do this thing because they want to steal your money. They want to keep you in these separate bubbles. So you don't possibly start to recognize if it's one person trying to control 10 people, if I can keep the 10 people hating each other, I can steal all of their money and have them thinking that, and power. Have them thinking that, oh, that group number 3 is probably who's stealing your money. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
And, you know, for me, it's the water's fine. Come on, dip a toe in. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. And it's not cold. It's like you got to see for yourself. And that's why it's very key for our organization to make sure that we're not promoting an extremist. If we are extreme, we're extreme on, you know, making sure that we're doing the work to be balanced. We're extremely balanced. We're extremely, hey, I understand it from your perspective. Hey, I want to present this information and you make the decision, because I'm telling you that there's somebody with their finger up your ass moving your face around like a puppet. You just aren't aware of it.
Right.
You know, as a person that's unplugged from that matrix, I'm telling you, I just saw it, and I can show you.
Yeah.
I can show you the fields and fields of where you're plugged in at.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Let me fucking Morpheus the situation for your neophyte ass.
Right. I didn't even think about that. His name is Neo because he's a neophyte. No shit. Look at you, man. You're goddamn Jedi. You are a Jedi. Yeah, I mean, exactly. It's just, again, and you're absolutely right about, you know, pitting each other against one another, you know, that is the business of the media, you know, and anyone who kind of argues that, and, you know, that's why I was saying about Trump, you know, why he's saying it's fake news, it might be suspect, but at the end of the day, yes, a lot of media organizations exist to create polarizing points of view for which conversation can exist. Not all of them, but a lot do, because it's easier to have us bickering with each other rather than actually sitting down and listening to one another's kind of point of views on these things.
Right, and nobody wants to go first.
Right.
Nobody wants to go first. I don't give a f- I don't care about going first, because even if you don't agree, all right, cool. I've had enough conversations in my life where I've said I've known the answer, I've told somebody the answer, and they do the exact opposite. Then, like, time and life and shit happens. And then they get right back to what I said, and they come back and they go, hey, man, you was right about that thing. I know. That's why I said it. Because if I don't know, I'm going to say, hey, I don't fucking know the answer to that. Let's figure it out together. I've had that experience enough where if I've done serious study about a thing and I'm seeing the facts of the matter, and I can connect those dots that seemingly don't seem like they would be connected and draw those lines after the dots is connected, then I can share, hey, this is where they tried to fuck you, here, here, and here. I don't judge you because it's such a big trick that it almost seems like, nah, there's no way.
Right.
There's no way. There's like people that, listen, I can be on a completely different coast in 4 or 5 hours, but people from my demographic think the world is super, super big. Because they've never left their neighborhood. They've never been to South Philly from North Philly. Right. So when I tell them the time that it takes for you to get your first shift of work to the time that you get off, I can be all the way in Cali, chilling by the beach, waterside. They can't even fathom it because they've never been on a plane. So I understand how large, you know, the spell is on them. So because of that, I don't judge them because I'm just woke from the spell.
Right.
I give them the information to allow them to wake themselves up. And then after they wake themselves up, they make better choices. It's not about me, you know, them. They have to follow me in that sense. It's about me saying, you got to lead yourself. I'm a leader, so you're going to follow me in the beginning, but you're not supposed to stay with me.
Right.
You know
what I mean? Well, here's what I think is ironic, because on the one hand, it's like, you know, there's an aspect of our culture that sort of glorifies sort of the criminality of black culture. You know, people make money off of the criminality of glorifying street culture, and you know, there's a lot of legitimacy and reality to street culture. You know, my family, you know, deeply being a part of that, given the amount of motherfuckers that were still in jail. But they ironically would not feel comfortable with your sort of taking empowerment. You know, it's just like taking gun culture into your own hands. Like, they're happy when it's a rap song or whatever, where it's just like, you know, guns are around. But when someone like yourself says, all right, here's how you do it properly, here's how you be an adult, here's how you respect this tool, that's when they kind of shy away. And I'm only, you know, talking about, again, people, basically liberal people in New York City and LA and metropolitan cities who I feel like would might have pushback against your organization, which I think is awesome. But it's like,
it's beautiful when they do that, though. It's beautiful, because if they're open, we are a walking embodiment as an organization of people that show that tops that narrative on its head. And then if they talk to me, I go, well, again, you were tricked into believing something. And if you do presently believe it, do you think that people in urban environments have a genetic predisposition to kill themselves because an inanimate object goes into their hand? Does that object, it's not a magical wand with evil powers that changes you into one of the Monstars from Space Jam. If you think that, then
it assumes the worst about us. Right.
You understand? But if you do think that, and if I say it and you go, well, wait a minute, damn, I may have had a bias or a racist tinge to some of my conditioning. Now you can start to break that.
Right.
Unless you just really, really believe that if I put a, because okay, then what about African American or urban white, black, Asian police officers? They're from the same urban demographic, and then they go be police officers. Is there some sort of magical thing that stops law enforcement officers from being genetically predisposed to this Monstars, you know, fucking magic?
Yeah,
does that
yeah.
happen? Because if not, then that in and of itself, a guy from the hood that happens to be a law enforcement officer, again, tops that narrative on its
head. Well, and again, these people hate those exceptions. You know, it's just like, listen, like, I don't come from any better means than anyone else in my neighborhood, but my mom, she didn't let me hang out, you know, on the stoop. You know, she said, go upstairs, do your homework. You know, my dad was in jail and I was aware of that. So I knew that I had to make better choices to not end up like everybody else. And I ain't no fucking success story, but I realized that there are decisions to be made. And, you know, I come across, again, liberal white people that are like, well, that's just you or whatever. It's just like, yeah, it's just me. But it's also a lot of other people I know, and it is possible. Right. And white people seem more liberal. White people seem more obsessed with, again, back to the beginning of this conversation, the victim narrative, than they are about, hey, you guys come from kings, pharaohs, you know, philosophers and scholars. Like, you know, you come from these great things. You're not a victim. You're just having a bad round right now, and you're on your way out of it. So it just always fascinates me when people are just like, yeah, you're always going to be, you need our help. Fuck that, you know?
Right. And there's again, there's power in getting people, you have to get people to accept their own inferiority in order to somewhat prove your own superiority.
Mm.
However, false that story is, if I can get you to believe, it's, I mean, it's, you know, it's like poker. If I could bluff them, I could beat them.
Right.
I could bluff you. And if the environment doesn't give you any information to strengthen, or not even strengthen your side, but to weaken my bluff, nothing said, hey, that might be some bullshit. Nothing said that. And the only story that you're told is, yeah, your history started in fucking slavery.
Mm-hmm.
What?
Mm-hmm.
That fucking pyramid's 10,000 years old.
Right.
In the middle of fucking northern Africa.
Right.
Like a motherfucker. So it was with that level of precision, like the top of fucking Khufu's pyramid at the Great in Giza Strip, that shit is the exact center of the planet Earth.
Right.
Slaves did that.
Right. Yeah, man, it's like
that
right
the precision.
Right, exactly. I mean, and again, and no one, you know, I had to teach myself. You know, I went to this private school in the Upper West Side of Manhattan. I had to go to the library and scour for the fucking books about my own history in order to figure out what I was really about, because I just kept getting sold as bullshit, and I was just like, well, you know, I mean, it's not all bullshit, but it's just like, where do I fit into this? And I had to kind of seek that out. And it's like, you know, the whole white privilege argument. It's like, who does that help? Like, black people know white people have shit. You know what I mean? Right. Like, for some corny white girl that I'm dating to be like, you know, I apologize for my white privilege. It's just like, that is almost another form of racism and condescension to say that you cannot emancipate yourself unless, as a white person, I relinquish this power
I
that I have.
I release you
right
from my spiritual fucking
right
it, over your African life.
Right, fuck you.
Get
it's bullshit.
Out of here, bro.
Yeah, exactly.
And see, for me, for somebody like me, it's like, okay, well, if that's your conditioning, I don't even accept it as my conditioning. I go, if someone said, like, when people, you know, oh, white supremacy, the wording in and of itself is a spell. It's not supreme. It's not.
Right.
It's actually a white inferiority complex masqueraded on several different levels, from liberal to racist, as supreme. It's not real.
Right.
Four fucking example. Sorry if this sounds harsh. I interact with the sun. The sun's kind of like, I got a lot of melanin.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't have the best amount of melanin.
Mm-hmm.
So, okay, if you're saying superior, and if you to a certain extent cannot deal with the same level of sunlight, that clearly is not superior. That does not mean that one person's better than the other as a person, but that definitely doesn't mean that you're superior.
Right.
Period.
Man. It's basic philosophy. It's just perspective. It's just like, turn that shit around. Do Aikido. Do jujitsu mentally and say, listen, fuck that. Fuck that reality. I'm going to make it my own. And I just feel like our culture is like, no, you're a victim, whatever. Listen,
I'm fucking daywalker. I have all of the powers with none of the weaknesses.
Right.
And if I need to bite somebody's fucking face off, I can. Just like those people can bite somebody's fucking face off.
Right.
You know, I might not have as much resources right now as the secret fucking vampire family, but they can't come outside in the daytime. So
right. That's the perfect fucking metaphor. Shit, man. All right, so how do people get involved? Where should they go to? How do we help you out? What's the best way to what do you need right now?
What we need right now is to get our goal of another $100,000. We had a little bit close to or over $50,000. Our overall goal is $150,000. So right now, everybody that's listening that agrees and understands that, one, we're not a racist organization. Everyone is involved. Everyone can be support. Everyone can, you know, be a part of what we're doing. If you understand the philosophy and how the balance of it all is important, because we've been extremely pushed to extremes, if you think that that would if that has resonated with you, and if you want to support, please hit our GoFundMe. GoFundMe.com/BlackGunsMatter. $5, $50, $5,000, $50,000, shit, $500,000, $5 million, whatever. We're very transparent. We are completely supported by you guys and gals, the people. You know, and all of those different things. If anyone wants to get some merchandise, go to our website. That also helps us a lot. Our t-shirts, our hoodies, you know, the coffee mugs. That's officialblackgunsmatter.com. You know, if you follow us on our social media, our Facebook is officialblackgunsmatter_MajTouré, MajTouré. That's my first and last name. My personal Facebook is Maj Touré, MajTouré, first and last name. Our Twitter is Black Guns Matter, but it's spelled BlkGunsMatter. My Instagram is, our official Instagram is Official Black Guns Matter. My personal Instagram is Maj Touré. And yeah, that's the ways that you can get us. Oh, our YouTube channel is youtube.com/BlackGunsMatter. All of this stuff can be found on our, you know, on our website, though, officialblackmatter.com. But again, the biggest thing that we need right now, to be perfectly honest, is fucking money. Like, we have no large benefactors right now. Yeah. If you guys want to bring us out to your city, we can send you out the packaging so we can get it an event. If you donate a certain amount, boom, we'll come out to the city. You can, you know, hit us up, contact us through the website for that. But right now, we have the heart of the people. Everybody's supporting us. But in order for us to continue doing this 50-state tour, you know, as great of a concept as this is, you know, United Airlines is not going to be like, you know what, Maj, we'll let you fly for free. And Hilton is not going to be like, you know what, this is on the house. It just doesn't matter. You know what I'm saying? So,
or, man, yeah, yeah, I feel you.
We need about $100,000 more. And if you know, somebody's listening, if you're really, really rich, and if you want to, like, hang out and give us $100,000, that would be awesome. You know, if you want to give us $1 million, that would be awesome.
Well, you hear that? All my rich white friends I went to high school and college with. All right. Niggas need some money, so pay up so we can change the world here, all
right? Right, for sure.
Listen, man, I really appreciate talking to you. I'd love to stay in touch. And, yeah, let's keep in contact. And, yeah, I really like what you do, man.
All right, for sure. I appreciate you having me.
All right, brother. I'll talk to you later on.
All right, peace.